This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Utopia Media's California Politics Today. We're about to speak to James Harrison, who's special counsel to the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine. Welcome to California Politics Today.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to talk about the hearing that was held in the at the Hayward Court of Justice in Alameda County today. Were you there? Did you participate in the oral arguments?
I did not participate in the oral argument, but I was there and listening attentively.
Okay. Tell our new listeners and reiterate for our old ones who the two sides were and who represented them.
Sure. And in fact, there were three sides represented in court today. The various state defendants, including the Independent Citizens Oversight Council, the California Institute for Regenerative Medicine, and the constitutional officers who are named as defendants, were represented by the Attorney General's Office, Deputy Attorney General Tamar Pachter. The plaintiffs, People's Advocate and the National Tax Limitation Foundation, were represented by attorneys affiliated with the Life Legal Defense Foundation, Robert Taylor, Dana Cody, and Terry Thompson. And the California Family Bioethics Council, a plaintiff who has also filed suit challenging Proposition 71, was represented by David Llewellyn.
Okay, and functionally and procedurally, what was the purpose of today's hearing?
Today the court heard competing motions for judgment on the pleadings.
And what were the plaintiffs asking for in their pleadings?
The plaintiffs asked the court to declare that Proposition 71 was unconstitutional. People's Advocate argued that it was unconstitutional because it violates Article 16, Section 3 of the California Constitution, which requires an agency to be under the exclusive management and control of the state. And the CFBC argued that Proposition 71 violated the Constitution because of the single subject rule, which requires that an initiative address only one subject. Same reason that the People's Advocate alleged, that is, that the agency is outside the management and control of the state, which included a claim that the board is inherently conflicted, and for a number of other reasons.
Okay, and the defendants, represented by the State Attorney General in the person of Tamar Pachter, responded to this pleading in what way? What was their counterargument?
The state defendants filed their own motion for judgment and essentially argued that on the face of the pleadings, that is the complaints, the plaintiffs have failed to state any claim.
And that's a piece of legal language, which means what?
That means that Proposition 71 is constitutional.
Okay. And what was the attitude of the judge? Who did she ask what, and how did they respond?
She was very attentive, interested, and thoughtful, and asked a series of questions that, in fact, she had given to the parties before the hearing so that the parties could be prepared to address them. She wanted to know the answer to several procedural questions. For example, because the cases are consolidated now, and they
right.
were originally two separate actions,
right.
she wanted to know, for example, whether she could grant judgment for the defendants on People Advocates' complaint alone.
Right.
Or whether, because it was consolidated with a CFBC complaint, she couldn't do that.
And did she ask the Attorney General's Office how they felt about that?
She did.
What did they say?
The Attorney General's Office told her that she had the power to grant judgment for the state defendants on the People's Advocate complaint, and the lawyers for the People's Advocate agreed that because the People's Advocate action raises a facial challenge to the constitutionality of Proposition 71, that was an issue that she could determine now.
If the two parties were agreed that the cases could be decided separately, on what grounds were they originally consolidated?
They were consolidated because they raise similar issues of fact and law, and both of them, if successful, would invalidate the Proposition 71, which would therefore prohibit the state from issuing bonds.
But they are still separable in terms of the judgment. Both parties agreed.
Well, It's a little bit more complicated
okay.
than that. In order to have a final judgment
right.
In the consolidated action, the court would have to rule on both complaints.
Okay.
Having said that, from a case management perspective,
right.
the court can say now that the claim raised by People's Advocate doesn't state a claim, that Proposition 71 doesn't violate Article 16, Section 3. That doesn't mean we're finished and done. We would still then have to resolve the claims raised by the CFBC, but we wouldn't have to continue to fight over that claim.
Got it. Okay, let's talk about the crux of the case, namely that the allegation on the part of the plaintiffs that the funding mechanism established by Prop 71 is unconstitutional. I spoke recently to Hank Greeley, a professor at Stanford Law School, about this, and also to Dana Cody, one of the plaintiff's attorneys. And I'm wondering if you could clarify, from your point of view, the reasons why Article 16, Section 3 of the California Constitution, saying that no state monies can be expended by any institution not under the exclusive management and control of the state of California, doesn't apply here.
That's not the state's position.
Okay.
The state's position is that Proposition 71 is consistent with Article 16, Section 3. That is, that the ICOC and the CIRM are under the exclusive management and control of the state.
The state is arguing that both the ICOC and the CIRM are under the exclusive management and control of the state. Is that right?
Correct. The Proposition 71, as written, which creates both the ICOC and the CIRM,
right,
is consistent with that constitutional requirement.
First, could you say where you stand in the set of lawyers here, or where the CIRM is? Are you also a party to this case separately, or together with the
state?
The
Attorney General represents the CIRM and the ICOC and the members and all the other state defendants.
But you represent the CIRM?
Correct.
Okay.
We're counsel to the CIRM.
Now, if I understand it correctly, we only have a short time to deal with this. The language in Prop 71 establishes in state government the institute, which is meant the California Institute of Regenerative Medicine, the CIRM. The CIRM is established in state government by Prop 71 as a constitutional amendment question issue, and therefore you're arguing that supersedes, or are you, the provision in Article 16, Section 3, which prohibits the spending of money by any institution that's not in state government.
I don't
right?
even think we need to get there.
Right.
Because I think even without that provision,
right,
that the Proposition 71 is consistent with Article 16, Section 3.
On its own, without that provision.
Correct.
Because
there are sufficient attributes of state management and control to pass that test.
Well, and briefly, those attributes are?
The manner in which the members of the ICOC are appointed, the various state controls that apply, such as the Political Reform Act, the Open Meeting Act.
It was my understanding that many of the provisions of those acts are kept from working on the CIRM and the ICOC by the terms of Prop 71. Is that wrong?
Yeah, I think that's a mischaracterization. The bulk of both of those acts apply to the CIRM and the ICOC. There are minor exceptions that permit the agency to function in its specialized activities, but the agency, by and large, has to comply with the very same state laws that a lot of other agencies have to comply with.
Are the plaintiffs contesting that characterization?
I think they probably would, but you'll have to ask them.
Right, okay. That being your argument, and what are the other attributes of state control that you're arguing are in place?
Well,
are those enough?
Well, there are a number of them. The initiative specifies the manner in which the money is to be spent, and actually imposes limits, for example, on administrative expenditures, and it requires that the ICOC function like any other state agency.
Plaintiff Llewellyn seems to be arguing that there are inherent conflicts of interest that put the members of the ICOC in an impossible situation vis-a-vis the patient advocacy groups to which they constitutionally need to belong. What's your comment on that?
Well, I don't accept that claim. I think that the structure of Proposition 71 invites people with expertise to sit on the board, and that's what was envisioned, and that's the way it works. These people, when they take the oath of office, take the oath to uphold the state constitution and to represent the California public, not a specific disease group. So I don't think that's accurate, and any more so than the fact that a person who has children in a public school system and sits on the board of education has a conflict of interest.
Okay. I'd like to be able to discuss some of these issues at greater length, but you said you only had about 10 minutes.
Unfortunately, that's right.
Let me just ask you to wrap up by giving any projections you want to about the process here and whether and when you think a decision is going to be forthcoming.
Well, I think the court, as I said, listened very attentively today. I think she probably needs to go back and think a little bit more about some of these issues because they're complex and there are some procedural issues she needs to grapple with. But my sense is that she will do that work as quickly as she can, consistent with putting out a thoughtful order.
Is your side anticipating an appeal? Should you prevail at this level?
I would be surprised if the plaintiffs don't appeal.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.